From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday, May 26, 2023. Checking the calendar for the Memorial Day weekend, a million things are happening, like ghost tours of Milwaukee, beer and trivia nights, they're all over town, and the Brewers have a weekend of home games with the Giants before they hit the road again. Today's National Paper Airplane Day. Back in the day, I used to fly paper airplanes out of the 20th floor office window of a former employer. That was back when office windows would open up. Yep, I'm that old. I love this story from Colorado. A driver was pulled over for speeding, and he appeared to be drunk. He was captured on police dash cam trying to switch places in the front seat with his dog. He was all set to throw his dog under the bus and claimed the dog was driving. Bad dog, bad dog. Speaking of dogs, from Portugal, the world's oldest dog turned 31 last week. That's 217 in dog years. A couple of questions. Does he still have his own teeth? And are they putting his food in a blender? I hope no one at Cops Custard is listening to this. We have a winner for the world's most expensive ice cream. A Japanese ice cream company's single serving is going to set you back $6,696. Why so much? Well, they start with one of the world's most expensive ingredients, a rare Italian white truffle. It also includes Parmigiano and Reggiano cheese and sake, the Japanese wine. Well, I'm going to need a lot more sake before I drop $6,600 on mushroom. And finally, a man in China has been jailed for scaring 1,100 chickens to death. How did he do that? He used a flashlight in what could be described as a Colonel Sanders outfit. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Adam Bailey, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, as always, Max, tough to follow. NASDAQ up 2.5% this week, though, a good follow for sure. Closing the week at 12,976, the S&P up 0.3%. Closing the week at 4205. The Dow, a little bit tougher week, down 333 points, despite a 329-point gain on Friday to close the week at 33,093. For the year, the NASDAQ up a stellar 24.4%, including dividends. The S&P up 10.3%. And absent dividends, the Dow would actually be negative for the year, down 54 points from where we began. But when you include almost a 1% dividend, up 0.7% for the year. So overall, I think another lesson in potentially why the Dow's not the place that we should be looking first and foremost if we're trying to get information on the markets. It's a conversation we had around the table earlier this week, Dave. But clearly, relying on 30 stocks to tell us what's going on in the world may not be the best bet in terms of how well the markets are doing. You look at the S&P, you look at the NASDAQ, again, maybe an unfair comparison, but there's a broader story going on about just how strong things really are this year.
Yeah, Kyle, especially in shorter periods of time, when you look at 30 stocks, it certainly can be short-term news can certainly have a large bearing on that index. And I think, big portion of that tied to scares in the banking system recently and some other concerns in some of those areas. But yeah, what's not to like about the NASDAQ being up 24% this year, and even the broader market and the S&P up in double digits. So a lot to be, I think, optimistic about.
You know, Adam, the big headline this week was a single stock, a big piece of the S&P, clearly a big piece of the NASDAQ, up nearly 25% in a day. You don't get to talk about large companies that typically have that kind of run. That's more typical of the smaller, high-flying companies where a plus or minus 25% is a little more typical. But, you know, one company that represents a fairly significant portion of the S&P up 25 is a good way to get a good start on a good week. And, you know, we saw that this week.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, my goodness, talk about the ginormous jump that NVIDIA had this week. It single-handedly lifted the index into some positive territory. Profit forecast just absolutely blew way past what even Wall Street was estimating. And, you got to take all of that with a little bit of grain of salt, because so much is estimations of future profitability and demand for chips and to processing and the computer components and software if AI really does kind of get off the ground. And you know, that they're going to have to hold on to these gains by, you know, increased productivity for worker productivity. And if that doesn't happen, they probably won't be able to hold on to such big gains. But a lot of that is still a long way off from being seen. But it's great to see that even in case of NVIDIA, my goodness, did their profit estimations blow past what even Wall Street was thinking.
And perhaps, Adam, just a glimpse, a small glimpse into the future of what the potential of artificial intelligence really is. I mean, certainly we're going to see some volatility in that area as we start out with some of the infant stages of really putting it into practice, which we haven't really seen really that daily use of it that most consumers get. But boy, I'll tell you what, the absolute prospects of what can happen there is really staggering, and certainly we've seen it just in the small glimpse here with NVIDIA.
Yeah, we certainly have. And in another program called ChatGTP, which we mentioned on the show before, but you go back just 3-4 months ago, and that program, when it was put through the ringer of trying to pass the bar exam, I think it had something like a 30% chance of passing. And in 3 short months, now it's like a 70-80% chance of passing it. So it's a quick learner. And there's a lot of potential here. Certainly, we saw that with NVIDIA.
Well, I think what we have learned over the history of technological innovation is that new technologies replace certain job functions. They replace certain people. And so we have to continue to keep that in mind as we look at what comes next with artificial intelligence, what comes next with automation. There are roles in the current environment, which won't exist in 10 years because it's replaced by artificial intelligence. Of course, the other side of that is that there's far more roles that will be created as a result of that technology. And so it certainly isn't a comforting thought to sit in front of a room of people that, you know, maybe some of those roles aren't going to be around, but also for workers that are committed to continuing to learn about what the next thing is, about what they can do to contribute to the potential benefits of implementing that kind of technology. It's profits for a company, it's job security, it's all kinds of things that ultimately, I think, lead to economic growth. And so when you look at really where the prospects are for kind of this technology, I liken it to the internet revolution, I liken it to the advent of personal computing, not, you know, mainframe computing, but having a computer on your desktop that allowed you to do work that you were doing by hand before, going all the way back to likening it to the introduction of tractors replacing farmers, allowing them to move to cities and take jobs that otherwise would have been taken up by their need to farm. And so this isn't a new thing. It's a thing that has for generations driven economic growth and will continue to do so.
Yeah, I don't want to bring down a party, but the other thing that it will create is regulation. You know, it's one of the things Congress is discussing in forming some regulation for AI. Congress has been in the news enough this week. Maybe they got to focus on something else apart from this. But that's kind of the other piece, is we're going to have to find a way to write laws to deal with this and to do so in a productive manner.
And we've been talking about ChatGPT and artificial intelligence and the roles that automation and robotics play. It feels like forever now. I think an obvious story developed this week with NVIDIA, a pretty clear path for how's this ultimately going to play out for investors. Well, it's the very things that we've been saying from the beginning of this, that there are companies that stand to benefit. NVIDIA as the maker of the graphics processing unit that ultimately does all those calculations that artificial intelligence is built on, they're a clear benefactor, but there's plenty more that will, in time, show up as benefactors. And so I think the key is you stay broadly focused, you look at what the growth opportunities that are available to investors are out there, and go, okay, well, here's one way. Adam, you joked about Congress. Of course, we still have this debt ceiling hanging out there. It seems like as we record this, on Friday before Memorial Day, earlier in the morning Friday, it sounds like a deal had been reached, at least in principle. Now, as you look at that, looks like it could be at least a few more days before we get a vote on that. Plenty of hurdles to go, and certainly by the time people are listening, they may have a very different picture of what's going on than we do as we're recording. But plenty to talk about there.
Yeah, and I think all of our listeners just got to remember that at some point, Congress will agree that water is wet and that the sky is blue and that we should pay the bills we agreed to pay. And a deal will happen. And at the moment, it's basically how much uncertainty do we have to put through before a deal is done. But this too shall pass, and we'll get one. And you start looking on the other side of that. And, okay, if we don't have the single largest source of uncertainty right now, temporarily, the market goes back to focusing on just interest rates and earnings and not, you know, what's coming out of Washington. That's ultimately for the better. For right now, we don't have a deal done, but we're certainly getting a lot closer.
You know, I get a lot of clients calling recently, this week especially, about, you know, what do we do? You know, what should I do differently because of this issues with the debt ceiling? And I think this really just brings up another great case in point about the importance of having a well-balanced portfolio, taking into consideration at all times what your short-term needs are. Make sure that you have cash levels that are appropriate to your spending needs and anything that you might have on the horizon, whether it's the debt ceiling or anything else that might come along. You need to be prepared for the unknown at any given point in time. And a good balanced portfolio with ample cash for your near-term needs will survive just about anything. So I think that's the critical lesson to learn in a time like this.
And also keeping your eyes on the horizon, not on your feet, right? Because one of the conversations I was having with clients this week is they're asking, you know, what is the market going to do next week or something like that? And my response was, well, where is it going to be in 2028, you know, 5 years from now? Let's have that discussion. And reminder that, you know, this isn't just about today or tomorrow, but 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Keep your eyes on the horizon and certainly focus on balance.
You both covered that so well. I've got nothing to add there. Joel, we've got...
No, I have nothing either.
Oh. We've got a newsletter coming out this afternoon, you know, touching a little bit on the debt ceiling, but I think hitting home on some of the same points that Dave and Adam were talking about, just as importantly, you know, I think some pretty interesting other pieces of information coming out in what we've got for clients this month.
Yeah, we've got an article from you where I think you did a good job of balancing, kind of addressing, you know, what we've been talking about so far of, you know, by the time people hear this podcast, by the time they read the newsletter, maybe a deal will have been reached on the debt ceiling. But, you know, regardless of when it happens or how it happens or what the dirty details are, there are things that long-term investors need to do to situate themselves and to put this in perspective. We also have, you know, we've got little features that we include in there, like the Money Talk quiz, where we take conversations from these podcasts and put them into multiple choice answers in a quiz format, just to sort of reinforce some of the points made on the podcast. But we also have what we're reading, where we share articles and podcasts and videos that the professionals here at Landis & Company find worthwhile passing along. And one of those actually was what you were talking about before. It was a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week that brought up the whole point of the Dow, that it's not a very representative index for investors, and yet there it is out there all the time, and it's good perspective to have.
Here we are quoting it at the start of every podcast as well, so maybe we need to change our own habits a bit and refocus investors on those things that matter. Some of those things that matter, some economic data, Joel, second revision on first quarter GDP, a little better than expected. I think, you know, the fear was, hey, GDP is okay. It's not great. Growth was reasonable, but it could get worse on that next revision, and yet the second revision showed things actually a little better than we thought initially.
Kyle, I think I actually said on this podcast when the first one came out that we're probably going to see the consumer spending aspect ratchet down in the second estimate, and actually ratcheted up. It was stronger than what their first estimate was, and so because consumer spending drives the GDP so much, the GDP was stronger than originally estimated. Originally, it was estimated at growing at a 1.1% annual pace, and now they're saying it's 1.3%. And, you know, all those numbers and more lately have just sort of been saying that we don't it's a reminder that we don't necessarily know where the economy is. And that's another snapshot to say that it's a little stronger than we thought it was. Inflation came in at 4.4% rather than 4.2% in the initial estimate. And, you know, we want to see that inflation number go down because that's what the Fed has been concerned with. And that's why it's been raising interest rates.
And of course, we got some news on housing this week. It seems that not a month goes by where a comment on inventory isn't at least part of the conversation. Obviously, interest rates, another issue that's out there, but it's tough to sell a house that doesn't exist.
Right. The National Association of Realtors came out with their pending home sales index, and that's 21% below what they consider normal with the population, the size that it is. It's down 20% from where it was a year ago. And again, back to the GDP report, that showed that people's investments in their properties and their residential assets has been going down for 8 straight quarters. So that's 2 years.
And then we got data on consumer spending for April. We were just talking about consumer spending reflecting a bit of a shift higher in the first quarter numbers, but the April number a little more updated. And signs that inflation remains a little more persistent, signs that spending is strong enough for now, at least, to keep the economy humming along at a pretty low level, but still growing. And so, you know, I think maybe perhaps the Fed has a tough job still ahead of them here to get inflation back to that 2% target.
Yeah, that was that 4.4% inflation rate that I quoted before came from the April report. And, you know, that's down from 7%. You know, back in June, so there's progress. You know, back in June, that was a 40-year high, but it's still more than double the Fed's target of 2%. So there's still work to be done.
You know, we saw that. You know, with the debt ceiling talk all week, the Fed finally took a back seat for a week on the headlines, right, which was kind of welcome in my mind, but
and in theirs.
But I have to say, Joel, you know, you bring up a great point about those economic numbers potentially opening the door for the Fed to hit us again in June. You saw the Fed funds futures now top 50% on the likelihood that they will hit us with another quarter point in June in their continued battle to bring inflation down.
And you also saw that in the 10-year Treasury going from what was, you know, 3.4 not too long ago, now up to around 3.8. So it's playing out in the longer area of the Treasury market as well.
Yeah, a little steepness in the yield curve isn't necessarily a bad thing. It tells us expectations for the future are a little better than they were. It tells us that perhaps rates stay a little higher for a little longer. But ultimately, you know, rates really outside of the very short end of the curve aren't as high as what we maybe had feared. And so, I'm encouraged that the economy continues to hum along, that the unemployment rate stays as low as it does. Some concerns, obviously, about what the Fed needs to do still to get inflation under control, but these are all things that have been developing for the better part of the last year and a half, and we're not going to solve them tomorrow. I hope that the debt ceiling is the one that we do solve in the next day or two. I hope that we don't have to talk about it again next week. Get the deal done. Let's get 2 years of spending accounted for. And then we can circle back and focus on what actually matters, have a real conversation about how we keep the economy growing while getting inflation under control. Well, with that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.